Welcome to the BIM Heroes podcast, second hour. We'll be discussing the design and education parts of the conference and the stages around how the future of AEC is changing design. Just wanted to start off by doing an introduction of our speaker, Carl, and I'll turn it over to you, Carl.
Yes, thank you. Carl Storms, Technical Solutions Lead at Nuforma, Nuforma Connect. Happy to be here. I spent many years learning the trade that way is the way to go. But, you know, I'm starting to realize that the idea of maybe a more focused plan. I started off on the university route. I ended up going the college route, so a trade school. And for me, it ended up being more what I wanted. I was more technical focused. It got me to where I wanted to go a little quicker. So I think that's definitely something that people should look at, and you know, don't be bound by thinking, you know, I have to go to the university or you know, to do that. Getting the education boots on the ground, I think, is something we're going to see more and more of as we're going through, and we can't wait any longer. You know, with everyone leaving the industry, you know that all the grays going and the greens coming in, we need all the people we can get. So let's get them how we can get them.
Do you think that one of the challenges too is that there's different requirements, let's say, on the design aspect, where they're really pushing them into knowing a lot of these softwares right off the bat? Because a lot of the design aspect, from what we see from the GC side, is that they become almost glorified draftsmen as a part of the beginning of their career, and then they kind of work their way into that as they go. Talk about that conversation.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely true. You know, when you're going through and you're learning and they're teaching you, and you're exactly right. Usually what happens is you go through school, they say, okay, we're going to teach you software A because that's what the industry says we're using. And so you take some classes, you learn the software, you learn, you know, digital drafting as we mentioned. But you're not really learning how it's done in the industry. And we hear that from a lot of people, whether it's on the architectural engineer side or even on the general contractor side, that they get these people out of school and they're technical whizzes. They can make any software do anything, but they don't necessarily understand how work works, you know, how the industry runs. Back in my days of teaching software, I had a wonderful, you know, an example. We were teaching some engineers. Revit had happened to be the software that we were training. And there was a younger gentleman in the class that could just make that software or anything. Like, I didn't have to tell him nothing. He was an expert. But one of the managers from his firm presented a question to the class. You know, if we were doing this building and we had this design, could we make that work? And he said, oh yeah. And he just whipped out and made this custom family, this big beam, and like had it in no time. And she's like, that's great. That's a custom order beam. It's going to take us 6 months and blow the budget. Do you think that's still a good idea? And you know, he's like dumbfounded, you know, that this came. But, and she sort of, you know, backtracked and said, the point is that yes, software can do anything, but reality has limitations.
Right.
And you know, so maybe that wasn't the best thing to do. And that's kind of the point of, you can't teach knowledge. Well, I guess knowledge is the wrong word. You know, you can't teach the idea that you have all of the skills and that you've come. The experience is the word that I was looking for. Code experience.
That's right. I hear you there. And I think that's one of the challenges too when they get into, you know, these products and these softwares, is they believe that the industry is unique in a way, but they think that there's a right answer for everything. And I feel like that's a kind of the assumption when they're in university or college, where they think there's the right answer is in the back of the book. And I think one of the things I would like to see from the technology, from the design aspect, and then follow its way into construction, we talked about it in the last hour, was, is there a way to have the collaboration of the tools help educate somebody on code? You know, is there a way to do that from the design aspect? Because I think that's a big challenge, is to not learn not only the soft skills, which is what I'm referring to, but also the technical skills that you still have to learn.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. And the idea that we could somehow incorporate what the software does, or even, you know, we go into the future of AI, you know, how the software lets you learn it,
yep,
which seems mind-blowing when you think of it that way, but it's coming. You know, the idea that they learn things and there's limitations built into the software because, you know, maybe you couldn't do that massive beam because of, you know, XYZ reasons. I think that's a great idea, because exactly, we need to get more people sort of trained. We need to be able to do that. But I still don't think you're going to be able to replace that experience. And I think that's one of the things that we're going to lose, and that we have to find a way to download all that experience from all these people that have, you know, they've done it wrong, so they know how to do it right. And when we used to train people, that was the ones that got it were the ones that made the mistakes.
Right.
And it's like, well, I know not to do that, and now I know how to do it the right way. So you get more value from that than if you just, whether you're a genius with the software or you just luckily get through and don't have the things without having to look at the back of the book. I'm stealing that, by the way. That's brilliant. To get the answers, you know, making that mistake, you learn what not to do, which is sometimes more valuable than just knowing what to do.
Exactly. Where do you see the future of this industry going, let's say, from the design aspect of where it is?
Oh, if I only had a crystal ball.
Yeah.
But really, you know, the idea and what the plan is behind that, and where the everything is going to do with that. I think we're seeing that. You know, it's technology is going to be the future. Mm-hmm. You know, and whether it's things like we mentioned AI a little bit earlier. So you know, you have the ability, like we've seen ChatGPT, or where you ask it a question and it gives you prompts and it gives you the ability to go through. And really, that. It's not the idea that there's something out there that can tell you how to solve a problem.
Right.
It's the fact that you had to learn how to ask the right questions to get the right answers to solve the problem. And so it's the journey that gives you the knowledge to know what to do moving forward. And I think that's part of what we're going to find going forward, is that it's less teaching ABC, it's more teaching the workflows and, you know, this is a problem, these are some possible solutions, how do we get there?
Yes.
And it's that journey that's going to be the difference that we're going to see as we're working our way through.
And I think that's a great lead into what we talked a little bit about in the past too, is generative design. You know, we think that there's only one way to solve a problem. But what if we had 20 different solutions and we produced that in a design-oriented idea to the GC and to the owner to be able to solve problems? Where do you see that going?
Absolutely. And, you know, just the fact that we can take advantage of the horsepower of this technology that we have now, we can use things like generative design to, you know, test thousands and thousands of solutions that we would never have had the possibility to test before. And when that first came through, we're like, hey, you know, this is great. But then it presented its own problems, because we could never create thousands and thousands of solutions, but now we're expected to review thousands and thousands of solutions. We've created our own little problem.
Yep.
And that's why we're already seeing that next iteration of that generative design, where instead of it presenting thousands and thousands of solutions, it creates those thousands. But based on your prompts and your commands, it says, okay, these are the 20 that you're most likely to want.
Yep.
Exactly. And so now we're being more focused. We're getting that information quickly. And now we can make those educated decisions on what we want. And say, for example, from the design side, we now have a starting point that we have more time that we can spend to make and deliver a better building.
Yes. Going to the concept of collaboration, one of the challenges you see in the industry is that on the front end, then we'll get to the back end. The front end is defined by stages, SD, DD, CD, mm-hmm. on and so forth. And there's a hard line stop, right? Contractually, that is the stopping point. And we put a budget together, the GC would, and then help bring that to the next phase. But that's not how models work. They're very dynamic. They're not static. So where does that go from here?
That's, you know, sometimes people say, what happens with the model when you're done? And, you know, we've had so many of these scenarios where you go to, you know, conferences or shows, and everyone has that picture that you all see where it's the back room with thousands and thousands of blueprints. Well, unfortunately, right now, models are kind of the same thing. We just have a digital back room,
right,
where we put them. And I think that's what a lot of people are trying to solve. I don't want to say solve that problem, but the idea of things like digital twin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we spend all this time, all these resources, and all this effort, and putting all this great data into these models, and then contractually, this is the end, here you go.
Yep.
Do the owners want it?
Right.
Do the owners know how to use it when they get it?
Yep.
Does their system handle that? So I think that's the next sort of...
Start with the end in mind.
Exactly. And when at the end of the day, when you have the handshake and, you know, everybody passes the information over, we're now passing this digital portfolio over with this model, but we want it to be in such a state that it can be used.
Yes.
And I think the biggest miss that we have right now is that people are making assumptions on what that person taking that data wants. And perhaps we're spending too much time making these wonderfully detailed models that they don't really need. I just need a box that says it's the AV unit, the air handling unit, but I need the information. So when I click on that box, I can see when it was installed, when it was updated, what do I need to do that. I don't need it to look like the box.
Exactly. And I think that's the mindset that we fall into, is that both sides seem to be at odds with each other, right? You know, the GC always talks to the owner and says, we will build you anything that you ask us to build, but we have to understand where you fundamentally stand on how long you need you're going to give us to do it and how much it costs. And it's at odds because when you talk to design firms, you know, their biggest struggle when sitting with, let's say, an owner is that when they go to pursue a project, it's very different than how a GC pursues a project. And it's almost in this confrontational relationship that they're using the model in a lot of ways to show them something that fits the narrative of their client of what they want, but they might not be able to afford it. And so that's a question I want to ask, like, how do we get to a point where that's not a confrontational relationship? And it's a loaded question both ways, because I think we both have as a whole, the industry can go back and forth on this.
Well, it does, and it absolutely is a loaded question. But I think just generally, most things, you know, if you go to look at a car, they never show you the base model car when, you know, that's what's advertised, but that's not what they show you. So it's a very similar thing when they're doing that same thing and they're bringing in all the information, you know, about the model. The idea is that they want you to have that the best that they can be. They want to design the best product they can design. And sometimes it's a question of, well, your budget was A, but we can see for a little more, we can get this, and maybe the owner will say, okay, we can do that. But I think you're absolutely right. At the same time, sometimes that budget is a hard budget, so just showing them something that they can have isn't of benefit to anyone.
Absolutely. And, you know, the big question then becomes, as you're working through the design aspects of a project, is what is the starting point of constructability, which is from the beginning, and then what is the start of coordination? There's always that fine line between these two words, because it is really a process that we're trying to develop that's using the model. I just want to have a conversation that surrounds that.
So when it comes to that, that's a great question. And I'm a firm believer that everyone should be on side the second we decide to start that project.
Right.
Because it's just a better outcome for everyone. Reality says that's not always the case, you know, but we're seeing more and more things like Design Assist, where we get the trades involved earlier on to help. You know, we get owner's representatives now that come on board that help the owner understand what they need, what they want, have those discussions with them. And it always reminds me of sort of the quote that we see out there, coordination is contractual, but collaboration is voluntary.
Right.
And
which just fundamentally doesn't make sense at all.
It doesn't, but then when you think about it, the idea is that, you know, if somebody says you have to coordinate your drawings, you have to coordinate your models, they give you a document that says to this level, the dreaded LOD conversation, and you get there. Well, when you get to that point, you can stop.
Right.
The collaboration aspect, you know, the voluntary, basically what that means is that if you have a trade or someone working on the project and they don't have the skills that everyone else does, you spend that 5 minutes, that 10 minutes to show them a quick tip, to show them something, and you bring the entire project up. That's what they mean by, you know, the collaboration being voluntary, is that you take your time. You're not worried about the internal conflicts of, you know, they're a different trade or maybe they're not with us. And everyone tries to improve the project, to make the project better.
Yeah. And I think that's also another great point of this conversation, is that we are constantly in this situation where you are trying to take a point in the model and you are saying, okay, I've got this design to a certain point, but if I'm going to take that forward, we're too soon to point something at. Just talk a little bit about, you know, just the timing of how we go through a process of design.
Well, that's exactly it. And it's so funny because as you're working through that process, you're coming to a scenario. You know, we talked earlier about the idea of generative design and how we have these tools and this technology that's going to help us get there. We have these ideas, but sometimes, as I mentioned earlier, it's the journey that gets there.
Yes.
So as you're walking through that process, you may stumble onto something that you just didn't even really know you wanted to do during that process. And that's kind of where everything kind of builds off of, you know. this is an organic form. I wasn't expecting it, but it works with that. And then,
and we might, as a GC, we might be too soon to question that yet. It's not there yet. Yes.
And that, I guess, flips back to the other question that everybody's involved a little bit early. If the general or maybe the structural steel people are saying, you know, we can't build that. We can't build that.
Right.
But, you know, we're too early. We're doing this design. We're just trying to play with the ideas. We don't want to stop before we get there. But if you're telling me I can't build it before I've designed it, then we have some problems. So very good point that we have that idea that we need to let the process be the process.
Yes. Because there's the defined moments in when these things come together. And we don't want to limit the fundamental ability of an architect and design team to be able to do what they fundamentally are asked to do, which is to take something that is written down and bring it into reality on paper. That is the fundamental goal of that. Which leads me to another loaded question, is this concept across the pond in the U.S., Canada, is not the same as it is here in Europe. The model is not a contract document. It is, it has not got that far as it has here. What is your opinions on, do you believe it should? And what's our process to like try to take that to the next step?
Wow, that is a loaded question.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of thoughts. I have a couple thoughts on that, and I better clarify that it's I that have a couple thoughts on that. The idea of the model being the deliverable, when, if, it's probably more if, we get there, it just saves so much time because right now we are using these great softwares to give us these great designs, but they're not necessarily great documentation tools.
Right.
And so there's a lot of backtracking, a lot of things that are put in the model specifically for the purpose of that 2D representation that we have to hand over.
That's right. And it might not fundamentally be three-dimensionally accurate.
Exactly.
Right.
But if we get to the point where we have technology that will reliably allow us to view the model, to not have to have dimensions or anything on it, we could click on a door and it tells us all the specs and we can build from that, that would be great.
Right.
Then we have to make sure that that version is locked down so somebody doesn't have old versions, same as we do with the 2D or the PDF versions of that.
And the sections actually are related to what the 3D is showing.
Exactly.
It's not just a block.
Exactly, which also leads to other issues, which means we can't have those glorious days of our 2D drawings where you had everything off to the side. You know, your back of house and under your bed has to be clean when you hand those over.
Yep.
But then the next step is that not only do we have to have the technology to do that, which I think we're pretty close to that.
Of course.
But then the municipalities, the people that look at those have to have that technology.
Yep.
They have to have a way of doing that, a way to just freeze that as a moment in time. But when we get there, I think that's game changing, right?
Yeah, because I mean, like we're living in a three-dimensional world, but we're looking at two-dimensional details, and some of the biggest challenges in understanding and fundamentally putting something together, as we know, it's the instructions of a project, is being able to look at the detail and understand if it's the right detail for that, and it's not just a copy and paste going forward.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's the big point as well, because currently, again, working from the model and we're delivering these 2D documents, as much as we all go, oh, I can't believe it's 2D again, that allows us a degree of checking to going back and make sure. And, you know, this dimension doesn't line up with that dimension.
Right.
And so we do that. So, you know, the thought is if we're working inside of a model, that dimension is going to be right in both spots. But what if it's not?
Yeah.
And if we don't have that visual indicator that, hey, this is 3 and this is 4, it's a little bit harder. So then maybe that becomes the next thing, the technology of we put that model, that cube in a box, and the software goes through and makes sure that everything that represents that one wall is the same.
Yeah, and I think that's the next piece of this is I feel like the industry as a whole is becoming more delegated. These systems are getting more and more complex, and you have specialists and let's say envelopes and curtain walls and all these complex details that bring the systems together with all the, you know, the glass and the beautiful nature of where these buildings are going. Is there, you know, end in sight to maybe see some of that realized a little bit quicker in terms of in a 3D environment versus a 2D? I just think we just get stuck into this notion that we can build something that complex with a two-dimensional drawing.
I would agree. I think we've probably hit that limit where right. where what we could do with 2D versus what we can do now with 3D is we rely on that 3D to visualize and to give these amazing buildings that we're seeing nowadays life.
Right.
So I think that's absolutely where we need to go. And I think the step after that, as you mentioned, we've got all these people that are specializing in particular areas, particular parts. And it does sort of seem like we're getting further apart from everyone working on the same place, the same utopia of everyone working in one model, which we thought was a big thing when BIM came out, you know, 10 years ago. Well, I guess not in BIM, but in BIM in 10 years ago, we thought that was a big thing.
And now we're linking everything together.
And now we're realizing maybe that's not really the case.
And do you think that's a software limitation, or is that a limitation that we want to see less data as we're going through it?
Yeah, I think it's both. You know, we always blamed it on the software.
Right.
And then we said, well, now the software can do it, but now it's the hardware. We don't have the hardware.
Yeah.
And, you know, then we don't have enough internet speed. There's always an excuse.
Right.
But I think it's just fundamentally everyone works in the model differently.
Yes.
And so if we have architects in the model that design one way and they're very fluid and moving, and we've got engineers that, you know, have limited time and design a certain way, and the general contractor that just wants to get it built, we're all using that model differently. So to all be at the same time is going to cause havoc. And I think we've seen that. And I think that's why the idea of moving forward, the new utopia that we're looking and hoping to get, is the idea of just passing data.
Yes.
So I take the data, I pass it to you. Your software represents it the way you need to see it. You work in it the way you need to work in it. But at the end, all the ones and zeros come together, and it looks the same for everyone in the process. And
so
I was just going to say, I don't think we're there yet, but
right.
I think that's
where it's got to go.
Where we're, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And I think that's a great lead into, you know, your involvement now with Newforma in this interoperability of between products, because now you've got a lot of powerful products, but some of them don't talk to each other. Some of them are starting to talk to each other. What is Newforma doing to help us be more collaborative and it not be stored, let's say, on a static computer, but maybe going to the cloud?
Absolutely. You know, great question. And the idea there is that at some point we're starting to realize that not everyone's going to be working in the same software, and more importantly, not everyone's going to be working in the same software every time.
Right.
So on project A, we decided these are our limitations, these are our softwares, great. But then when you go to project B and a whole different team, a whole different software stack. So you mentioned Newforma, and you know we now have a new product called Newforma Connect, formerly BIMTrack. And the idea behind there is exactly what you say, you know, the fundamentals of Newforma Connect, which again, previously BIMTrack, was that open BIM, the idea of interoperability. The issue tracking is done through BCF. The models are IFC, so these are formats that any platform can export. But on top of that, you know, we take the integration part very, very seriously. So we have an open API so people can connect into the product and, you know, add their own connections. We have almost 35, probably getting closer to 40 different integrations. So if you're using, you know, Navisworks or Salibri or, you know, Enscape or whatever the product, you're able to do your work in that product and pass it on to the other people that are using the other things. And it leads exactly back to that problem of interoperability. And, you know, it's one thing to say everyone needs to use this software, but it's another thing to have everyone comfortable in that software. So if they're able to do their work in a place that they're comfortable and share it back to the team, I think that's a win for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think we've got to get to that point, because it's nothing more frustrating when you're going through a design process, whether you're from the GC side looking at it as it's working its way through, and you find something where, let's say, the design team has a limitation where the architect didn't send me the updated floor plans. And so when we wasted 2 weeks waiting, and they never even got what they needed to start their design. I think that has to change dramatically to get it to the point, because, you know, at the end of the day, design teams are getting tightened with their schedules, mm-hmm. almost if not further than the GCs are. And, you know, the GCs were set with a lot of our timelines, because fundamentally we understand how long it takes to actually physically build it. Mm-hmm. But it's not fair to a design team to be able to design something as complicated as we're seeing in a very, very short period of time. And I don't know how, and this is a question I have later on today with the client stage, is that when do we get to the point where we understand that there is a process that has to happen and it organically takes form, and you still need to take the time to fundamentally design that project? Because if that project comes out late, and, or let's say early, and it's not fully to a point where it's truly at the CD level. It just fundamentally changes the way that the project is started and completes, because it's not at the level of completion that it's needed to be there. But if we gave, let's say, another month or two, maybe it could get there. And I just think that that's a big challenge. The owners today look at the design documents as something as just the intent, but they're not gaining any value from that, because they're not making, let's say they're not making any money, or they're not getting into their building quicker, versus the GC that has this real tangible product that at the end of the day they're going to see in real life, and then they start making money off it. How do we change that mentality of that to help the design fight back a little bit about getting some of that time back to design the project?
Oh, if I had that answer. But you're absolutely right. And like you say, on the construction side, I don't want to say it's a little bit easier, but you said it very eloquently that, you know, it takes X to do this physically. Like, there's no magic pill to make that quicker, so we need this much time.
And we have to have that direction. We got to have the means to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the problem on the design side is that I think fundamentally, especially, you know, the firms out there that have been doing this for a long time, they know they need that X amount of time as well. But the problem is that the owner and everyone wants a deal. So we need to do this in 4 weeks. Well, firm A says they'll do it in 3. Okay, we'll do it in 2. Well, you know, everyone's behind the eight ball now because of that.
Right.
And one of the things that comes to mind that with that is, you mentioned, you know, on the contractor side, we know that it's going to take a week. And if we have new technologies and new workflows and we can do that, that takes a week in 4 days, that's literally money in our pocket.
Of course.
On the design side, if technology comes to play and now they have that 5 days, and now they don't have to do as much prep work, so that now they have, you know, 5 days instead of 4 or 4 days instead of 5, to them it's not money in their pocket. It's an extra day to do a better design,
right,
to deliver to the client. So it really truly is about time. So when they give away that time, it hurts everyone.
Of course.
And it comes down to saying, you know, for this envision of this product, it's going to take this time. We need that time, and you're going to appreciate it at the end, Mr. Owner, when we go through that.
But exactly.
It's not always an easy sell.
Yeah, and I think both sides of the equation, I think that us as GCs have to, you know, fight for that on the front end, because ultimately it's going to impact us on the back side.
Well, absolutely. If you're, you know, we all work with hyper speed projects now, and we've all done something where we're coring a slab as they hand me the drawings, you know, and they're,
approve this.
How much more effective is your team going to be if they know a week before what they're doing, and you can schedule everything around that, as opposed to always putting out fires?
Exactly. And I think that's what we're in the business of doing. And we've always been that, but now it's just, you know, we can't, the industry hasn't stepped forward in the ways that we construct materials, different things. We still have the same time frames, and they're getting actually longer because the quality of labor is starting to diminish. Where, you know, we used to get two of the three: quality, scheduling, or costs. And you're barely getting one of them. You know, and so it's one of those things, like, you know, how do we change this mindset to get a really good completion of drawings so that we can start to eliminate some of that on the back end? This is crazy. Some of these projects are, you know, 2 years, but they probably should take 3.5 years with a 2-year design process on them. So it's,
yeah,
but they're not going to wait that long. And I don't know, as an industry, that we have this, you know, conversation with it, but everybody's just so hyper, you know, trying to win a lot of work, and both sides of the equation have this ability that if we don't do it for less, and we don't do it for, you know, less time, we're not going to win any projects.
Yeah. And I think that there's a story out there, the truth or folklore, I'm not sure which it is, but, you know, the Empire State Building was built with 100 page set,
yep,
whereas, you know, the new World Trade Towers were built with like 3,000 pages.
Right.
And, you know, the idea there is that which building was more complex? Well, it was part, the intent, the design was the intent, and it was just built the best way to build it.
Correct.
And not only are the buildings more complex, but the technology that goes into the building. So think of all the times they didn't have to worry about threading all of their, you know, Cat 5, Cat 6 cable, all of the Internet of Things, all that other stuff that we're adding in there after the fact. So the fit-up part is taking much longer now as well. So, you know, we're adding more and more stuff to these, not just the beautiful design, but everything that goes inside of it. So the whole process, like you say, is just growing in spec and scope.
Yeah, and I think that as that continues to grow, you know, there's still going to be that natural progression of that design. Talking about the design, how is BIM changing the way that we design?
Well, it kind of leads back to the point earlier about how we used to think it was going to be. And, you know, the idea behind designing in the model, you know, having the information, the intelligence, the model, I think is great. And I think the fundamental idea behind why everyone got so excited about BIM in the first place is still valid. But I think as we've spent, you know, 10, 15 years, 20 years, some people working in that idea, the mentality of working inside of BIM, we've learned that some of our original assumptions aren't the same.
Right.
You know, the idea that someday we're all going to work in the same model. Technically, it's probably possible, but again, as mentioned earlier, probably not ideal.
Right.
You know, what do we want as the outcome? What does the owner want from the outcome? Now that the owner has heard this BIM buzzword for 20 years, do they know what they want? I'm going to shake my head no. They're still trying to decide. You
got to start with the end in mind.
Well, exactly.
You know.
And it depends on who that owner is. You know, are they going to flip the building as soon as it's built, or are they a hospital or an airport or an institution like a university where they're going to look
it's
after that?
A critical infrastructure project, yeah.
So it makes a big difference. So
we can't get to the point where, you know, 60 years from now, we have paper drawings and they just deteriorate. Like, we got to have a way, and to bring it forward, with the models, we can't have something that's fundamentally incorrect, right? I mean, if it's not correct and we didn't go and do the backside of the as-building process, which is still absolutely required as part of this, then we're no better off than we were in a lot of ways, right? Because 60 years now, or even 20 years from now, whatever the life cycle of the project is, they want to be able to use that information to either renovate or to construct a new project.
Well, and that's the same thing as you mentioned, you know, 60 years, 100 years, we've got this paper that's deteriorating. Who knows what technology we're going to be using in 60 years from now?
No.
So are we even able to open those models, right?
No.
So, you know, when's the last time you went and got an old 5.25 floppy disk and tried to fire that bad boy up?
Yeah.
So, you know, the idea is that not only that, that's another sort of fear, if you will, moving into this technology, that if we're handing over this deliverable, this model, that when that university does a major renovation in 50 years, how are they going to get back to that data?
That's right. And know that it's not only complete, but it's accurate. Because everybody that was involved in it is no longer here. So it's such a really interesting question to pose to everybody, is what is our goal? As an industry, as a community here at BIM Coordinator Summit, what are we trying to promote on the front end so that in the back end, we're giving a really good product to them? The next piece of that I want to go into with this is, where do you see BIMTRAC's position in all of this? Is it more for the GC? Is it more for the design? Or do you think it's across both aspects?
That's a good question. So BIMTRAC, as you mentioned, now Newforma Connect, the idea here is that we want it to be, our tagline, or my tagline when I'm doing demonstrations, is the idea that we don't want you to change your workflow. We just want to be your assistant in that as you work through. And that's why we chose to be so sturdy with our stance on Open BIM, and the idea that, you know, the platform uses BCF and IFC, and the idea that, you know, down the road, the technology that's in it, you can view that anywhere inside of it. But the idea, back to your original question, is, you know, who should be using it? You know, we have people that use it through the entire gamut. We have people that use it from the early on design all the way through to, we have owners that use it on the end. But if you're being, who's using it the most now, general contractors are probably using it the most. And then our engineers and our architecture friends tend to fight it out kind of for number two and three. And we find that once people get into the product, you know, they need a way to communicate, they need a way to track their issues, their action items out of it. And usually it's a general contractor that will invite them into a project, and they'll use it for the project, and then they'll see, hey, you know, this could have benefits, maybe we'll use this as an internal tool. which we see a lot of people, once they get it, you get unlimited projects. So we use it on this big project, but now we're using it to plan our, you know, our office picnic as an example.
On the constructability question of it, I think that's the next piece of on the design and the GC as part of that design process. I'm actually going to talk about this later on today, but I think as an industry, we've not done a good service to the client in the means of constructability. Working through each of the different stages and trying to do that in a collaborative method. We all have a part of giving comment on how to make it the best product we can build. And I want to just preface that with, what do you see that Nuforma Connect and the industry needs to do to become better at that process of constructability?
Well, I think, again, I'm gonna keep playing on this same term, but the idea of interoperability, being able to share that data is a big thing. And the idea of understanding that, you know, yes, we use product A, and we love it, but on that next project, we may not be the one making the decisions, and we may have to pivot and use project B or C or D. So that flexibility, and there's lots of people that can understand lots of different products, but not everyone's going to be an expert at everything.
Right.
And so being able to have an outcome that can be viewed and used and shared in different platforms, I think, is where we need to get to. It's the interoperability is the key, is the goal.
Yeah, and the thing with it is that the projects that we're dealing with, they may be static in the way that you're designing them, but we live in a dynamic world, and we have to be able to use those models to dynamically see how it's going to be impacted, whether it's, you know, weather events, whether it's different ways of looking at how the building is going to fundamentally change over time in its use. And just want to talk about that. And then I want to dive into quickly, where do you see it going with potentially taking these projects in an urban planning situation and it really start to see a dynamic situation play out with the smart cities between all the different designs of all the different buildings. I want to talk about both of those.
Wow. So I think the idea behind, I'm going to go work my way in, you know, with urban planning and with smart cities, I think that that's the goal. And we see a lot of, you know, large major cities doing that. You know, the idea of first we want to, you know, get past of just, you know, Google Street View, we have all these buildings, but we want to have purpose-built models or representations. We want to be able to get into those and have access to them. We want to have the ability to take advantage of all that intelligence, you know, when the cars drive by, we're hooked to their Bluetooth, we know how much traffic we have, you know, all those intelligent things so that we can make that planning. So we're not at the stage where a lot of major cities are now, where the infrastructure that was built, you know, 50, 60, 100 years ago is all falling apart at the same time. So if we have these smart cities where this intelligence, these, you know, things put in place where they can track that early on, we can do that preventative maintenance, I think that's the key. And I think that's exactly where we want to get to. And we're just slowly starting to find a way to do that. And it all circles back to what you've said a couple times here is the end in mind.
Yes.
So if we start planning knowing that we have to give a representation of this to the city, they're going to use that in their master model and they're going to design from there. I think we're going to...
And do you think that there's going to be pushback because of the different design firms, you know, giving over that information? Because that's a big challenge right now. The GCs still fight to this day that the design team is so worried that the GC is going to take it and misinterpret it or change it in a way that they didn't do it. And I think that's the biggest challenge with them not allowing it to become a contract document. But if we're ever going to get to the ultimate goal that we just talked about, you're not only going to have to share that data in a way that is accessible to everybody, but you're also going to have to say, all right, here's our design to all the other firms and all the other competition, but we're doing it for the good of the city.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of people, you know, the IP, the intellectual property, is a big challenge to get over that hurdle. And, you know, everyone has a different reason why that is. But on the flip side, there are firms that are just, you know, hey, here you go. My work speaks for itself. So let that be what it is. And maybe that becomes that inside the models, just like we use, you know, digital signatures for our paper contracts now. Yeah. Maybe we have a digital signature in the model so that everyone knows who that is and where it is.
And if you change it, it voids it. Yes. Just like if it would be with a standard drawing.
Well, and we see that now, and we have technology now that shows, you know, old version, new version, what's changed, what's not. So you could certainly see that, and that would be beneficial.
And it's a digital stamp.
Yeah, and that would be beneficial for the owners down the road as well, because that 50-year renovation, they can see what's changed over the years. And,
Yep. You
know, we get even outside of technology from the modeling place, but now we've got 360 photos, and we've got laser scanning, and so we have all of this data of the construction process.
But our design was designed at this point, and it was supposed to last until this point. But if you violated that in the process of building it, or you violated it throughout the 60-year life cycle, it shouldn't go back upon the designer that something was wrong.
Well,
and that's the big fear.
It is the big fear, and there's two schools of thought on that. There's that say, you know, something could go wrong down the road. They misinterpreted what I interpreted or the person 50 years ago interpreted. I want no part of that. The other side, we have the people that understand that there is a stream of revenue there.
Yes.
That when we hand that over, we say, yeah, we'll hand that over with the one caveat that we are the ones that updates that for every innovation, every change.
Correct.
And so every year we make sure that model is current, it's on the latest software, it's up to date, it's exactly what you want. And so then now this becomes a partnership with the owner, this becomes a reoccurring revenue stream with the owner, and it's, I think, a win-win for everyone.
In conclusion to this session, one of the final questions I have is, what is the commitment from the design to basically create a more complete model, as we talked about earlier on in the session, to the point where when they hand that over to the GC and we end up building that we then go forth and create a digital twin?
I'm going to take that question. I'm going to flip it back on you and say, what if we didn't create a more complete model? What if we went backwards? And my thought here is that rather than having the architect design every single air handling unit and branch, they designed the intent that this is what this building is going to be, this is where the main branch is, and it's a certain size because it needs to take up so much space. But then we hand that over to the subtrade or to the engineer that's going to do that and let them do that. So the person that's an expert at that does that.
Right.
And so we as the designer, we spent less time trying to design something that needs to get to a level that's maybe not our expertise. We hand it over to the people that are, so they get more
and do
time.
That early.
Yes,
exactly. Versus waiting, you know, to a certain stage.
Exactly.
But let's get started with that process.
So again, it means everyone being involved early, maybe everyone getting in place, but it also means that we have more time working on the stuff that we're good at, the stuff we enjoy, and we get a better design and less redesigns down the road. At least that's my take.
Yeah. Thank you, Carl, for joining us. You know, any final thoughts you have?
I just want to say thanks so much for letting me on here. It's been a lot of fun, and great to be here, Cody.
Thank you all for joining us for the second hour of the BIM Heroes podcast here at BIM Coordinator Summit.